of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. We're live from Hollywood. It's Super J Radio with your host, Garrett Miller, starring Paul and Matt.
Mad props, Garrett. Mad.
I know. I got the music right. I can't even believe it.
That's two different shows this week that you've gotten it correct on the first try.
I'm honestly, Paul, I got goosebumps right now when that came on, and I was like, yes, the right music played. You know, because I did that last week because I screwed it up right before. Well, I screwed up when I set up the show, unless I change it from the default, which is the usual, you know, Red G Radio, blah, blah, blah. It plays that. And so last week, Paul was like, oh, make sure the music's right. And I'm like, okay. So I went in and changed the clip to make sure that it was going to, you know, do what it was supposed to. But the system didn't update or reset itself before the show started. So, of course, it went back to the old music. So I think I'm getting into the rhythm now. It's taken me, you know, 3 months to into the new year to kind of get all the changes going in the right direction. But, man, I'm telling you, it's
well, yeah, daylight savings time, and, you know, RuPaul had two queens eliminated, so he can bring some old bitch back. And Frank, Miss Viola can't be with us because he got called into work this week.
Yeah.
We do have
we miss
Jorge.
Frank.
I know, I love Frank.
Jorge.
And we do have Jorge Olivares, and I can never say his last name right because I can't roll my tongue. I can do other things with my tongue, but I can't roll it well.
let's start a list of things Paul can do with his tongue.
There's a long list. When I was young and out in the bars and stuff like that, it was a big deal to be able to tie a cherry stem into a
knot.
And I could do two knots in one stem.
What a talent that is.
Yeah, got me a lot of drinks.
Yeah, I bet it did.
So I'm just going to do a quick recap of RuPaul's.
Yeah, tell us what's going on with RuPaul.
Layla, the poor queen, got thrown off, and also Dax exclamation point got thrown off. And the dirt on it is I listened to a podcast, the Feast of Fun podcast this week, that had the Naisha queen that we talked about last week on. And she's saying that one of the queens that got kicked off this week was heard backstage saying, we've got to do all this ourselves, and RuPaul has a whole team of people to just walk down the runway and sit down behind a desk. I don't think we're being judged fairly.
Ooh. Is that what we call shade?
Wicked shade.
Wicked shade.
And I call it like really, really dark shade because it's really, really true. I appreciate RuPaul. He's a terrific entertainer. But quite honestly, look at his dresses. Every single one is the same dress in a different fabric with a different kind of zhuzh to it. But it's all the same outfit, basically. He knows what he looks best in, and that's all he does, which I don't blame him. I mean, you got that kind of money and that kind of fame, go ahead and do it. But I kind of get where the queen was coming from, if allegedly that was allegedly said backstage, and that's why allegedly two were thrown off at the same time.
It makes sense because, you know, if you're going to be casting any kind of disparaging comments towards the creators of the show, when you're there to, and you know what time of day it is before you sign up. It's not like this is the first season and nobody has a clue what's happening on Drag Race. This is, you know, whatever season that we're in, and you know you're going to have to sew, you're going to have to do things that you're not comfortable doing, and that's the whole show. And if you're going to bitch about it, shut up.
Yeah, and the thing is, supposedly it all comes down to RuPaul. So, I mean, the one that you don't want to piss off is RuPaul. I mean, what happened. That's why I think Grape Chapstick won it last year. Violet Chachki, who I call Grape Chapstick, because she's absolutely useless. You know, but she's was one of the few that didn't piss RuPaul off. So, boom, she gets crowned, and Bianca Del Rio was still the more famous one.
Well, look at Adam Lambert on American Idol. Do you remember who won?
No, I don't.
You don't?
No, I don't.
Nobody
I don't remember
who
won
American Idol after Kelly Clarkson. So, you know, after you kind of went downhill.
No, the big black bear won over Clay Aiken.
Oh, Teddy
right?
Pendergrass won. That's right. Reuben Studdard.
Yes, yes. And, you know, he took his money, he bought a house, and then he went broke.
Yeah, as one tends to do.
I know. I used to love that lottery, ruined my life. That was a wonderful show on Discovery. See,
I never saw that, but, you know, I would be willing to win the mega jackpot power super whatever and take my chances, you know. I'd be willing to risk that.
Oh, I risk it every time that, you know, it's a big giant jackpot. But I wouldn't know. I mean, they had somebody on there who actually bought their trailer park that they lived in because they thought that was an investment.
Oh, my God.
I know. I know. Dream big.
Dream big.
So what have you been doing this week?
It's been a crazy, crazy, crazy week. So I think I told you last week that I'm starting on this new disco project for my next album. And so I worked with the producer that I'm working with on that. We came up with the first song. Now, the process that I go through is usually or historically for the last two projects, I come up with the stories that I want to tell, and then I put it into lyrics, and then I take, you know, my 7 pages of lyrics into my producer. And then, you know, I say, here's the kind of song that I want to create. And then he would make the music and then we would make my lyrics fit. That makes sense to me because that's how I've done it. Now, reverse to this, now we're going in first and my producer is putting the music together. I'm working with a different team for this. And he does the music and then says, there you go, write your lyrics and come back with something fantastic. And I'm like, how many words do I get per line and where do I start singing it? You know, so I don't know any of that. So, but the first song that we put together sounds really, really, really cool. So I'm very excited about that. But again, we've got a long road ahead because we're going to be doing, and let me ask you this, Paul, what's your thought on artists who release full length albums versus EPs? Do you even give a darn whether or not it's, you know, one or the other?
No.
No, I didn't think.
No,
so we may end up doing this.
On...
I may just to keep stuff fresh.
Yep.
I may end up doing 2 EPs out of this instead of just doing one, you know, regular length album. Because I think one of the things that I want to try to do on this is not only have the regular quote unquote radio mix, but I want to also include like the disco mix, which will be
right.
One of those 10-minute, you know, I don't want to say remixes, but 10-minute versions of the same song that you used to hear in the club. So if you want to have just the radio friendly mix, that's great. And if you want to really, you know, go way back in the time machine, we'll have a 10-minute mix for you as well. So I'm thinking that I may do a couple of EPs, but it's still going to be like a 10-song project. So that's kind of the direction that we're heading. But but I've had some great meetings this week. I met with Wendy Michaels, who was on the Rated LGBT radio the week before, and she and I met up in Santa Monica and had a great vegan lunch. I think this is the second vegan meal I've ever had, and it did not fail to deliver great taste. And you know, I you know me, Paul, I'm a dainty flower, and so I'm sitting here eating the lunch, and if I like the lunch, I usually eat everything in about 2 bites. I could have easily done that during this lunch, but you know, Wendy being the lady that she is, I did not want to come across, especially my first, you know, dining experience with her, come across as, you know, this pig who licks his plate, because I would have done it.
That's
I ate
never
half of my
thing.
Sandwich, like no. She ate half of her sandwich. I just tried to mimic, you know, her eating patterns, and she was quite lovely. We had a great lunch.
Because the thing is, she's mimicking your eating patterns. That's why everybody walks away from a business lunch hungry. And
that's is so true.
that's just how it is.
Business lunches when we used to be able to eat like barbecue ribs and, you know, sloppy French fries. That would be a good business lunch. But, you know, who wants to shake hands after you've been eating barbecue?
If everybody's been eating it, why not?
Yeah, I suppose so. Ugh. I don't know. I think that kind of creeps me out a little bit. But what have you been doing with your week, Mr. Paul?
Yeah, no, we weren't going to talk about that. But yeah, no, it's been
deflect, lovely, crazy. Okay.
No, it's been a hell of a week. I'm just going to say that it's been a hell of a week, and I'm glad to be here doing this because this is very distracting. My kitchen is coming along wonderfully, and
Can we talk about your kitchen project?
Yeah, we're getting the ceiling up.
So I don't understand this. So you have this beautiful kitchen, and I guess you've done this to other rooms in your house too. You have this beautiful kitchen, and then you want to put ceiling tiles on. What's the appeal of the ceiling tile? And I'm not for it. I'm not against it. I don't understand it. So after doing everything else that you've done in your house, why do you say, you know what this house really needs? It needs some ceiling tiles.
I've always hated textured ceilings, whether they're popcorn or the texture. You know, I hate that. Number one, it's impossible to keep clean. And
that you need to clean your ceiling for?
You got to wipe them down a couple times a year and spring cleaning, fall cleaning and stuff like that. Yeah, especially.
I've never done that to a ceiling.
No?
Well. Is that a Northeast thing?
No, you're just a pig. The thing is, when we bought this house, when we moved up here from Massachusetts to northern New York, we spent a year every other weekend coming up and looking at properties. We did a lot of it online with our realtor. And the thing is this house I took off the list 7 times before she finally showed it to us because I hated the kitchen. It is a long, narrow kitchen. It's about, 32 feet long by 10 and a half, almost 11 feet wide.
Wow. That's a long kitchen.
Yeah, with a cathedral ceiling. And skylights and I mean it's nice. Everybody loves it. I hate it because I can't make a good working station out of it yet. But we just decided that we're going to get this place. We love the property. We love the location. We didn't like the house. We said, well, we can change the house to what we want over the years. You can't change your property. So that's what we've been doing is, we started with the bedroom upstairs that was originally our master bedroom. Then we went to the dining room. The living room is just kind of sort of done, and just one room at a time. We're doing about 2 rooms a year. Because originally the house was a 700 square foot home built in 1870 something or whatever. And through builders and contractors, it's now a 2,400 square foot.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Now, did you have to retain any walls or fixtures or anything like that for tax purposes? Or did you just kind of add on willy-nilly?
No. Well, the thing is, we haven't added on to the structure. What we've done is we've torn walls out inside that weren't load-bearing walls and moved them. Like our master bedroom now used to be 2 bedrooms, and we tore down the wall and moved the wall so that now there's a one big master bedroom with a walk-in closet and a bathroom where the second bedroom used to be.
The way the good Lord intended.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, that's been the weather here. We've been 60s and today we're in the 20s. So we're kind of in that back and forth weather crap stuff.
That doesn't sound like fun.
No, because all of my lilac bushes are already budding. And if we have a hard frost, then it's just going to kill off the lilacs for the year, which I know. But, there's worse things. We could have Trump as a president.
Oh, my gosh. What do you think about it? I know we kind of talked about that. And I guess that, week over week, the more things change, the more they stay the same. But what do you think about Super Tuesday and the contest that we had in the last week? And, what's happening on the landscape here?
Well, we don't get ours until next month. I mean, New York is like April 16th, I think.
We're, No, we're just standing back and just letting everybody duke it out a little bit ahead of time.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm very political, but I really don't talk it that much to people that I don't know, because I have very, very strong feelings on it. I have no problem. My whole, especially this year, is vote blue no matter who. I don't care if it's Bernie. I don't care if it's Hillary. I don't care what it is, all the way down the ballot. It's all blue. I am just sick and tired of Republicans and their bullshit.
You know who we should really ask about this, Paul?
Who?
If we could only get like an expert news correspondent to call in and talk about what's going on in the world. Wouldn't that be cool?
I know this most adorable little Mexican down in New York City. If he would just call us.
Wouldn't that be cool if we could get Jorge Olivares to call in to the show right now? Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes.
Jorge, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be on. Y'all are so funny.
Yeah. Welcome, welcome. Is your hair done?
Nope. I'm literally in my shorts in my bed because I'm lazy and I already finished House of Cards, so I feel like I have nothing left to accomplish in this life.
Thank you.
What did you think about House of Cards, how they had the season finale?
It's so weird how it's – I mean, I'm sure they finished wrapping several months ago, but sure. It's so reminiscent as to what's happening now in, like, the political world that it's crazy that they sort of – did that little forecast, but I think it was a better season than last year.
Last season was tough.
Last season was a little difficult. Do you really think it was that hard for the writers to come up with the prediction of how this election was going to go? Because we're already a year into it, really.
I guess that's true. It's so weird because I still hate watch Scandal, and it's kind of like there's a lot of parallels between what's happening on Scandal and what's happening on House of Cards. But I think House of Cards is doing it better.
How do you hate watch Scandal? Because I'm in the same relationship with that show that you are. What is your reasoning behind that?
Because I've already invested so much of my life in that fucking show. Like it's not as good as it used to be. Nobody cares about Olivia. Nobody cares about Fitz anymore. The reason we cared about those characters, it doesn't exist anymore. And so those of us who are watching are just doing it because I'm assuming the shock value, there's always going to be something that Shonda throws in that's like, what? Where did that come from? So that's sort of the only thing I look forward to. I really did like How to Get Away with Murder more than Scandal, and that wasn't the case last year. I don't know. I hope that Shonda doesn't become the Ryan Murphy of ABC, where it's like it starts great and then just completely goes to the crapper.
And here's my problem with both shows, and I love both shows, but I've only seen season one of How to Get Away with Murder, because I watch it on Netflix when it comes on. The problem that I have with Shonda Rhimes shows is that she makes these great characters, and then they all have to give their impassioned speech.
Yeah.
At least, once a show or once a season, and you're like, oh, come on. This is really hard for the actors to memorize 14 pages of script for their little diatribe here. Can we just move on past this and get, That's what I struggle with when watching both of these shows, because I can overlook, a lot of things that, just conceivably, Shonda, from a plot standpoint, I'm going to go with you, but I don't buy it. But when they go on their speeches, Jorge, I'm done. I'm just like, I got to fast forward through this because I can't stand listening to them bitch and moan and complain. It's the same thing on both shows.
You know it's about to start as soon as, maybe not even a sentence, and you're like, this is their big old speech for the episode.
Right. But they're playing to Idaho. You have to remember that.
Olivia Pope playing to Idaho. Now we've heard it all.
Yeah, no, but they do. Everything has to. Why we have to fucking please the Midwest for television, I have absolutely no idea whatsoever. I find that the most thrilled I am with House of Cards is because the writing, stories, and acting have stayed consistent throughout every season.
Yeah.
Where network shows as soon as they get their audience, the writing goes downhill because they don't give a shit anymore. Everybody's going to show up anyway. We've already got our ratings. We've already got our advertisers. So don't put so much work into it. Just stretch this out for as long as we can. And that's just how I see all of it, because, I mean, there's so many shows that were so good. And then all of a sudden it's like, what the hell? True Blood.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I know that one I had such a love for. Yeah. And then once it got to, like, the Werepanthers.
Yeah.
I was so upset.
What are you doing to me? Yes, it is. Absolutely. Oh, and I just want to let everybody know, those who might not know, this is Jorge Olivares. He was the most fuckable news anchor on Sirius OutQ for several years, and he luckily got moved over with the hot Irishman John Fugelsang, and occasionally he gets to talk on that show every once in a while too. But he's an absolute doll for coming on this little tiny podcast and let me sexually harass him personally. Yeah,
I mean, it hasn't happened in a while, so I figured it should happen now.
I know. Well, every once in a while, I'll message him and say something inappropriate, just to let him know that I care.
and I did it.
So, I heard. Why are you single?
Okay, if we're going to talk about why Jorge's single, we need to ask him about the post that he had on social media this week about texting and then guys sending back their phone numbers.
Please.
Okay, yeah. So literally, I was talking about this last night with a friend. So as much as I said that I was going to give up online dating for Lent, I've sort of reneged on that a bit. And so I log on, but not as much as I used to, because it really does become this horrible time suck. So I was messaging this guy, and we had dozens of messages already together. And I thought, there's no reason why this can't exist offline. So I said, hey, I'm about to go to bed. Why don't you text me? Here's my number. And so I would assume that they would think that the next step is, okay, I'm going to use that number and then text you. And then he said, oh, okay, that's fine. Well, here's my number. And it's like, well, I gave you mine.
I know.
So I don't understand why you're trying to make me do more work. And like, it's a weird power play move that I just wasn't feeling. And so I just put it on there. I'm like, man, I hope somebody else feels the same way I do about this. And it's weird because it's kind of been mixed. There are some people, like some of my friends texted me later and they said, you're being a little too high maintenance about this. And I said, no, it's when you're trying to be that person who takes the initiative and then you just get slapped in the face. And someone's like, no, I'm going to be the one who takes the initiative. And now you have to text me. It's like, these games I just don't feel like playing.
I think you did the right thing. I wouldn't be upset about it, but I think that, it was
annoyed. I was more annoyed than anything.
Right. It was definitely a power play. And I mean, my response back would have been, you know what? Delete mine. We're done. Thanks. I haven't had to do, thankfully, had to do like the apps and shit like that. I played on them to find stuff for my Tumblr. Hey, if it's out there, I'm going to take it. But the thing is, I think that especially even online, because I get more people that flirt with me online on Facebook and stuff like that. It's like, I'm not here to date, I'm married, yada yada. Some of it's fun. Mm-hmm. But if it stays texting or messaging or whatever, I think there's a lot of people on Grindr, Scruff and all of those that are just there to type. And they're not looking to meet anybody. They're not looking to even text phone back and forth. They're just there to play in Messenger, and that's it. Because I don't know anybody that has actually gotten into a relationship off of any of these apps.
It's so true. Like, even thinking about my friends here, there's been one guy. So I have a really – of all my friends – who are here in the city, there's one who's really close to me who's also gay, and he's been doing the online dating stuff, and he's a fairly attractive guy, and he's been doing online dating for like 3 or 4 years, And so, I mean, granted, I was in a long relationship up until about a year and a half ago, so I didn't never think about, like, oh, what's going to happen when I'm online dating? But now that I'm, like, a year and a half in, it's like, well, fuck me. Like, this is actually not as much fun or not as, like, you don't get anything out of it the way you would assume you would when you're not in the position to have to use it.
Right. And you don't have to use it. That's,
I know,
I mean, you're in New York City. It's like, oh, my God. Because the type of person you want is not the type of person that's sitting at home behind a computer screen.
You mean my cholos? Is that what you're talking about?
Well,
my
no,
ghetto
I
Mexican
think that,
boys?
No, I'm talking about people that go out and socialize and go to museums and openings and art galleries and bookstores and actually live life and not
True.
Sit at home and jerk off behind a computer screen. They can do that once they're married to you. But
so, Jorge, what online dating are you finding any success with, or which ones do you like?
So I have OkCupid. I have this thing called Hinge, but Hinge doesn't necessarily – like, I get nothing off Hinge. And Hinge is one of those where it goes through your Facebook. It's somewhat like Tinder, but this
okay.
one, you for sure have someone in common with you on Hinge. Tinder, I think, has now become – like the no man's land of online dating, because it just has been in the course of so many other online apps sort of using the model that Tinder popularized. Mm-hmm. But OkCupid has been the most helpful, but that doesn't even say that much.
Do you find crossover with the different apps and the services and just go like, okay, I've already told you on this one I don't like you, or, well, how come you didn't like me on this one? Do you get into any of that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There was one where somebody messaged me on OkCupid and said, hey, you never responded to me on Tinder. I was like, okay, one, that's a little weird. But
yeah.
Two, like, it just goes to show that if you're on one, you're more than likely on three or four. And
right.
There have been a lot of times where I look at someone like, oh, you look familiar. Oh, yeah, I saw you on this other app. Oh, yeah. And the weird part was, I've never marched in Pride before this past year. And so I was marching with Pride with some of my friends in my church group. And I saw a guy who was waving his flag on the corner. I was like, oh, shit. Like, I totally swiped left on you. That's so weird that I see you in person. You actually exist. And you're not this, like, digital being that
right.
I assume doesn't have the life that you have.
Well,
yeah.
You know, one of the things that's interesting is one of our listeners, Tony G out of Hackensack, he says on Facebook, it says he and his partner met on Match.com, and this September they're celebrating their 10 years together. So, you know, I guess love is possible. So congratulations, Tony.
Absolutely. But cool. The thing is, I don't consider like gay.com, Match.com, the dating sites. I'm talking about the apps,
like the Grindr, Growler,
yeah.
Gruff.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, all that. Because the thing is, I mean, Grindr is what, you know, this guy's cock is 10 feet from you. Yada, yada. It's like, yeah, no, that's that. Because who's using that are all the married people just trying to hook up?
Yeah.
Well, maybe in northeastern New York, Paul, but I don't know about the rest of the world.
No, I think up here, the thing is that we've got a fairly decent-sized gay community, but we've got a much larger gay community that's still in the closet. I mean, the Craigslist up here is just off the charts.
Oh, that's interesting.
Half of them are, you know, wife is away, wife and kids gone for the weekend. Yeah, it's like, seriously? You put that out there with your pictures and shit like that? And, like, your wife can't search your browser history? I don't understand it.
That is kind of crazy.
But, you know, hey, I guess.
Hashtag never the faith, though.
You young kids and your hashtags, I tell you.
No, it's because that's the thing that I would always say when I would go on Larry's show about, like, if you ever take a picture, never the face, because why do you want to be that person? They're like, hey, I think I saw your dick pic. And it's like, oh, yeah, if I included my face, then I guess you did.
Oh.
Exactly. And never take a dick pic that you wouldn't show your face in.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, so make it really impressive.
No, make it really impressive. But the thing is no, if you're ashamed of it, if you're ashamed or afraid that it's going to get into the wrong hands, then you shouldn't be sending it anywhere. Because it's
well, how many
get
people
out
really
there.
Follow that, you know?
Nobody does, thankfully. That's why I have so many Craigslist pictures up on my blog. Because if I find it, I will post it, if it's impressive. So, but no, now tell me, how is it working with John Fugelsang?
You'll
never hear this,
John.
You can be honest. Yeah?
So, no, so what happened was December 2014, yeah, they came to me and they said, hey, you know, we were talking to some of the bosses here and they think that because of the way they had downsized Al Q News and sort of my responsibility on the channel, they said, we think you'd be an asset to another show. So here are a few shows that are either being created or already existing. And so see if you want to be a part of them. And so they told me a few shows and they mentioned John's show. And the reason it kind of sold me to begin with, because I had no idea who John was, but they sold it to me because they said it's from 2 to 5 p.m. And I thought, okay, that's perfect, because the other one was like at 6 a.m. and I was not here for waking up at 3:30 to be at work at 5. And the other one was like late at night. And I had already done, like when I first started LQ News, I worked 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. since I did the overnight newscast.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to have another late night schedule. So I said, you know what, 2 to 5 is fine. And they said, well, you can talk to John if you want. And I said, sure. So when I talked to John, and he was the big old LGBT ally that he is, and when he's the huge music head that he is, and when he's Catholic, when he has that Catholic background, I don't think he identifies as Catholic now. I was like, okay, this is kind of a match made in heaven. And so I found out when we came back from the vacations at the top of last year that he wanted me to be a part of his show. And so that's sort of been the way it's been since last January. And he is the nicest and the most, like every single day after we do our show, he always says thanks. He always tells me and Neil, who's the other producer on the show, he always says thank you. And he's always asking us if there's something else we can do with the show. He's always encouraging us to be more on-air presence, to have more of an on-air presence. So he is the biggest.
How is that different from other things you've worked on?
I see what you did there. So it's different in the sense that let's see. I don't think I'll get myself in trouble. So
well, don't do anything that's going to get you into hot water. But you know, how is working on this show different than other experiences you've had in life in general?
So
it sounds like John actually appreciates your opinion if you give it to him.
Yeah, he does. He always asks during the break, like, did you want to add something to that? And I mean, I know my place on John's show. If there's something that if they're talking about something gay related or something Latino related, then I tell him that I'm going to want to jump in. But if he's talking about, I don't know, like artificial intelligence, like I have nothing to add. So I'm not going to jump in and I'm not going to try to make my voice heard just for the sake of throwing my voice in there. But he really does encourage me and Neil to take more part into the discussions. Before, I will say that because Insight, the channel that John's on, is still so new and still has a lot of heat around it, all eyes are on us. And there's a lot of in-house support that other projects that I had been a part of for the past 5 years didn't have. So it's just interesting to see how people within the company view what we do as opposed to how it was when I first started and then even up until a few months ago.
Right.
So what's your typical workday like? Because all I know is I hear this great voice that comes on and tells us great stories. And, you know, I'm sure that you don't just show up and be a voice. You have to do some work behind the scenes. What do you do on the new show with John? And, you know, do you have a favorite part of your day?
So my favorite part of the day is, so John's show, we play music all the time because John loves music. But unless John tells me specifically he wants certain songs to play, I never tell him what songs I'm going to play. And so I spend a good portion of the morning finding songs that he likes to play music from people whose birthday it is that day. So I'll find some obscure musicians, and then I'll find the popular musicians, depending on whose day it is. And I'll pick whatever song that I think matches the tone for the particular segment that we're working on. So a couple of days ago, we had someone talk about the death penalty. So I try to make sure that whatever I play doesn't go like super hard AC/DC, because that makes no sense for that segment. So I really put a lot of thought into the music. And I don't tell John, because I like the organic reaction he has when I play the song. So a couple of days ago, I played Shania Twain's That Don't Impress Me Much, because our guest had a Shania Twain t-shirt on. I thought, that's kind of funny. Excuse me. And so I played it, and he was so, I mean, he pretended he was mad, but he's like, oh, this is a god-awful song. I was like, that's why I play it, because I like to see that reaction in you, because sometimes it becomes a bit on the radio, and I think that's funny.
Yeah.
So needless to say, there's two producers on the show, myself included, and then Neil, who he brings up on the show too. And Neil books the entire show. Neil's the one who reaches out to guests. Neil's the one who goes and works with authors. He's the one that does that part. I'm the one who's in charge of the music, the what we call the imaging, so the show intro. If we play anything specific for our promos, I create all the promos for the show. And whenever we're on vacation, I create what we call the best of shows. So I'm more of the technical person in that sense, and I'm the one who runs the soundboard during the entire show. But if we have a pre-taped interview, I'm the one who does all the pre-taped stuff. I'm the one who does all the editing. And it's worked out that way, where we sort of know our place. Neil knows what he needs to do. I know what I need to do. And if one of us needs to help the other, then we let that be known. But it's, considering we all met each other a week before the show started, it's surprising just how well we mesh. And I think we've learned not to take that for granted, because we've seen other shows where different components of the show don't work well with each other, and they're forced to make things happen that,
you ever get onto like an autopilot, you know, even though you've got great communication and things like that, but it sounds like it runs so smoothly that it's effortless. Would that be a fair statement, or, you know, what's your take on things, you know?
Especially during the actual 2 to 5 of the show, because we always have one commercial break, and that usually happens around, you know, 2:30, 3:30, 4:30. So the mechanics of it are so ingrained in me that it's like, okay, press that button, do this button, turn this off. Okay, good to go. And the good thing is I've been able to, I didn't know how to, I mean, without Q News, we had our own board in the office that Tim and I used. And so I learned that, but had it not been for John's show, I wouldn't have learned a lot of these other technical aspects of radio production. So that's another thing that I'm really glad happened, because had that not happened, my skill level would have been nowhere near where it is now. And I do like that it's become a little routine, just because in case something were to happen that requires our attention otherwise, like, you know, let's say during the course of the show, there's this news conference, or like, let's say John, even though he didn't want it, but let's say during the course of the show, Hillary Clinton made those comments about Nancy Reagan and AIDS advocacy, you know, that's not even a fucking word, advocacy. if he wanted that in the course of the show, we have to find a computer, get that audio, cut that audio, make that sure that audio is clean, and then have that ready to go for the show. So there's different things that could happen throughout the course that I have to be ready for. So if I'm good with the board, then I should be fine. Does that make sense? Like, I need other things to be completely, like, not, that just don't have me worried.
You do a good job. I love the show. I've always liked John. I know him more from Stephanie Miller before he got his show.
Oh, yeah.
But and then when you were on, I was like, oh my God, Jorge, and he actually gets to talk and say something.
I know.
No, because you're so smart. And well, no, you got a degree in journalism.
Yeah, so I have a degree in journalism and Mexican American studies because I wanted to, when I was in college, I thought the only way that I could talk with some sort of authority about Mexican American issues is if I had the knowledge behind it. Like, I couldn't just say, hey, I'm brown and I grew up on the border, so whatever I say about this makes sense.
Right.
I wanted to be able to have, you know about the Bracero program, know about, you know, the different social programs that Latinos were a part of in the 1950s that sort of led the way to the Chicano movement. Like, had I not at least taken those classes or made an effort to get that degree, all that stuff just would not have made sense to me. So I got those two degrees, and weirdly enough, I forget that I didn't start at Sirius when I moved to New York. I started at ABC News, and I was there for like 6 months before I even went to Sirius. But
how'd you get to
Sirius? So it's so funny. So my entire senior year of college, I had done this internship program with ABC. And so right around graduation, even though I thought I was going to be that weird local TV news reporter, like, hey, reporting live, there's a cat in a tree. Like, I thought I was going to do that.
Right.
And, but ABC messaged, sent me an email and said, hey, you know, we like your work. We know you've been our intern. Would you like to move to New York to work as a freelance assistant? And I had said no originally, but my dad essentially slapped me in the face and said, you're an idiot if you don't move to New York, at least for now. And so I said, okay. So I moved to New York to work at World News. And so I was the guy who would answer the phones at World News and say, hey, World News, this is Jorge. And weirdly enough, like half of the calls we would field would be from producers on the show who would want to get information about their pieces that were airing during that day's show. And
mm-hmm.
the other half were people who got through from reception who were like, hi, this is Don in Missouri. I want to talk to Diane about a story idea I have. And so it's like, okay. So you have to entertain these people. So that was kind of interesting. But because it was a freelance position, I was only guaranteed 6 months of work before they either had to hire me full-time as a staff member or let me go and then wait amount of time before they could rehire me as freelance.
Right.
So I was 22 and scared because I was like, what if I don't have money to survive in New York and y'all let me go? So I started looking around and I looked at Sirius and I can tell the story. So I was drunk one Sunday and I came back and I was like, you know what? I'm going to apply for this job. And it said that it required 2 years radio experience, which I had from college. And I had no idea it was for an LGBT channel. I had no idea anything. I just knew it was some sort of on-air anchor role. So I applied, and then as soon as I applied, I got a message saying I wasn't being considered for the position. And I thought, well, that's dumb. So, of course, in my drunken stupor, it said, you know, for inquiries, you should email Tim Curran, who at the time was the news director of OutQ. So I emailed him at like 11:30 at night, and I said, Mr. Curran, I don't understand why I'm not being considered because I have this and this and this in my background. And so I send the email and I think, whatever, if I'm not going to get it, I'm not going to get it. So the next day I get an email from Tim and he says, hey, the reason it says that is because we've actually already interviewed all our candidates, but if you can make it tomorrow for an interview, we'll fit you in.
Wow.
Like, all right. Okay. So I told ABC, I was like, hi, I'm going on my lunch break. And then I was gone for a long time to go do the interview at Sirius. And so I interviewed with Tim and the man who's the program director for, who was the program director for OutQ at the time. And I knew almost instantaneously that I wasn't going to get the job because the body language in the room made it seem as though I was this kid who was thinking he was bigger shit than what he really was and just wasn't able to handle the job. So I was like, all right, I'm not getting it, whatever. And so I leave and I don't hear back for a month. And so I'm at, you know, ABC trying to think, okay, getting close to my 6 months at ABC before they have to let me go. And then I get a call from HR at Sirius saying, hey, so we want to offer you this position. I was like, fuck me. Like, y'all took so long. It really took forever. So I said, okay, I'll do it. So my last day at ABC, because eventually I started working for World News Weekend, the weekend show. So my last day at ABC was October 3rd, 2010. And my first day at Sirius was October 4th, 2010, the very next day.
Wow.
And, yeah, I had no time to process anything. And I started at Sirius almost, it was like 5.5 years ago, which is insane to think, but it's been that long because
Has it been that long? I still feel
like the new kid. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
my
so
God.
Weird because when everything was happening with Al-Q, was it last month? I feel like it's already blurring the lines. But whenever we found out that Al-Q was going, it was a weird thing for me because I always felt like the new kid in town. Because if everybody who was on the channel, I was the one who was the last to join. Well, that's not true. Eddie with the outfield was the last one to join. But
yeah,
for somebody who had like a daily
anybody worthwhile
on the channel. You said it, not me. I always felt like, not that I didn't belong, but there were certain people that I got along better with on the channel than others. And I think that just had to do with the fact of the nature of how I got into the channel. But
yeah, some of them are assholes.
So I will say that there are certain people, I have different relationships with different people on the channel, and there are different reasons for that. But
right.
I still, even when I found out that it was going, I kind of, not that I felt like I shouldn't be able to grieve for Al-Q the way others were grieving, but they're working on my hey. Because I had been taken away from Al-Q at least the last year, I felt weird being as sad about Al-Q leaving as I did, because it's like, well, I didn't have, like, how do I put this? Does that make sense? So, like, I felt like because I wasn't fully Al-Q the last few days of Al-Q, that
right,
I shouldn't have been so upset about it. But there was no reason why I could not be upset, because it literally was the reason why everything has happened for me in the past 6 years. Like, I told my parents I was gay because I was working on Al-Q, and they're like, hey, what channel do you work on? I was like, fuck me, I have to tell you I'm gay. So, like, everything that happened after that was because of Al-Q. And granted, I think everybody who started an Al-Q had already been at that place in their life where they were comfortable with who they were.
Right.
And I needed the channel to help me be literally who I am today. And so I think that's more where my anger and my sadness came from, as opposed to the other people who legitimately had to worry about unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was just, we all came at it from different points about why we were upset that what had happened. But I can say that it was the most depressing last few days, specifically because Frank had happened to be in New York. And so it's like, Frank, like, you were literally the first person to put me on your on the channel. You had me on your show, and, you know, we did the whole I'm Jim's side piece, and I'm your little gancito. And, like, there was so much that came into every person on the channel that
yep.
I just thought, like, when am I going to see Frank again? When I've only seen Doria 2 times in my entire life. When am I ever going to see Doria again? And I hate that I took for granted the people that I met through Al-Q and the people that I worked with on Al-Q, because it happened so quickly that the way in which we were going to continue our relationship moving forward was never defined.
Right.
So I do get a chance to text Keith, and I'm going to see Keith's show in a couple weeks. Like, there are certain things that's like, okay, we're good. But then there are other ones where, like, I haven't talked to Tim or John in a long time, and I know that's sort of half on me, but it's like, when am I going to talk to them again? And I hate that for our listeners, that's sort of the same feeling. Like, when are they going to get a chance to talk to, well, granted, DNR have their own thing now, but, like, when are these people who got a chance to talk to Keith on the phone when he was screening the calls, when are they going to get a chance to talk to him again? and they look forward to talking to them the way I look forward to talking to them.
Yep.
So it's there are all these different components to the demise of the channel that I think weren't taken into consideration when the decision was made, and I think that's very unfortunate and very sad. And so I, even though I'm happy with where I am with John Cho, because it essentially kept me employed. I mean, there are other reasons why I love being on John Cho, but I hated that I was one of the ones who survived OutQ, and I just wish that wasn't the case, because everybody on the channel was so great in what they did that it was, I mean, I know business decisions have to be made for the sake of business, but when these people were literally the definition of a channel, and
right,
you just take that away, I don't think they understood what the repercussions were going to be, not just for the people who were involved in the channel, but whose lives depended on listening to the channel.
And you're exactly right there, because it really, somebody called into Derek and Romaine during one of their first, or during one of the shows right after OutQ closed, and said, mm-hmm, you know, the biggest loss are the people who aren't, are the rural gays,
mm-hmm,
that the only gay community they had was tuning into OutQ and calling into Frank's show and calling into Larry's show and being a part of a community that they couldn't have where they lived for whatever, mm-hmm, reason. You know, and that's what I see as the biggest loss. I honestly had no idea how much I would miss. It was like I got fired too.
Yeah,
they fired the
fan. No. And it's exactly. I'm sure that's how it is, because when you have the routine of like Fridays at this time unscreened, or if you're nice, he'll play Pineapple Prince. You know, like it's so much a part of your everyday life that it really is a death in the family, because I felt like I got incredibly close with our listeners. And I mean, the reason I know both of you is because of OutQ. So I had these relationships not developed, not just within the people who were a part of OutQ, literally on the air on OutQ, but when I say a part of OutQ, like all the listeners who called in are a part of OutQ. I mean, they still are,
yep,
even though OutQ in and of itself doesn't exist in the way that it did. The family that it created, it really is a death in the family, because I personally never took for granted the people who would listen to our shows and who would, you know, not think that I was dumb for making fun of my mom for going to Kohl's or for talking about my dating life or like how weird it is that I have a church group and then we go to like a gay club and we're all making out with each other. Like the fact that people don't, like there's no judgment, because, well, there's always judgment because, hey, that's who we are. But you know what I mean? Like we all come from the same core of having to feel at one point or another that we don't belong because we're gay or because we're lesbian or transgender.
Or queer, or questioning.
Like it was the unifying factor that all brought us together.
Yeah.
And I think that Ross Matthews put it best when he tweeted, and I've said this inside the company building, so I don't care that I say it now because Ross said it, but he said, how are you telling me that you have a channel for Jimmy Buffett listeners, but not one designated for your LGBT subscribers?
Yep.
Like, this makes no sense.
That's true.
I will say that when the decision was made and we were told to keep quiet, that I was one of the ones who went to our bosses and said, look, we all can't say that the writing wasn't on the wall, because once they let go of Derek and Romaine during Pride Month, no less,
mm-hmm,
that it was inevitable. But the way in which decisions were made as to how to let listeners know, I was very clear about how I didn't support that. And
right,
I was very clear about, at least a few years ago, I was talking to them and saying, look, we can do this, we can do this, we can do this, we can do this. And they never wanted to do that. So I felt like there was an opportunity that was missed. And I don't know, I still hate that I walk into my office now and no, I don't recognize anybody there.
Right.
So I'm still in my office that they had me in. The equipment's there, but I don't use the equipment. And that's sad to me because I loved doing the LQ60s. I loved doing the newscasts.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nowhere for that to be heard. Now they have me with a few sports guys. Granted, they're moving me to another office. But that in and of itself, like them physically moving me from an LQ office to somewhere else, is sad. And I just, once I move the office, then it's official for me.
Right.
I know LQ's, it's official because Keith's not there and Frank's not there and Larry, they've moved to another section of the building. But once they take me out of the LQ office where I've been this entire time, then it's real.
Wow.
And I'm not ready for it to be real just yet, but I know it's happening on Tuesday. So
wow.
Around.
Well, oh. Jorge, with that, we need to ask you
I'm
to come
like
back
such
for
a doubter.
Part two.
I feel like,
but
go ahead,
Paul. Go ahead. But we're running out of time, so Paul, I know that we're probably going to have some closing thoughts. Jorge, you're a dream come true. I'm so glad that you came on the show today.
Yes, yeah, so come back again.
I told Paul, I was like, can you remind me? Because I'm like a mess, and sometimes I don't remind myself about things.
I'll message you after, and I'll let you know why. But thank you so much, and
good.
Thanks for the reminder, sweetie. And we will definitely have you back if I retain the show.
No, yeah, definitely. I'm here.
Oh, you're
thanks,
right, Jorge. Thanks, sweetie.
Have a great weekend. I sure
thanks,
appreciate
guys.
You.
You too.
Take care. Bye.
Bye, guys.
So,
bye.
Paul, what a treat
yeah.
that was to have Jorge
oh,
on for such a huge chunk of his day. I mean, how
I
lucky
know.
Are we?
He's such a sweetheart. And it's so interesting. I had no idea about the story from ABC to out here and everything.
I know. I didn't either. I thought I knew everything. You know, I listened to all of his specials. And so real quick, did we talk about the many gay days in Anaheim and the great fans that were there for Derek last night?
No. Did you went, right?
I went and I posted some pictures on Facebook and said, make sure to tune in before you go to the park. And so hopefully we'll have some carryover for that. But what a great group of people. And I said, you know, before I go, Larry and, you know, I said, I want to get a group picture, you know, with you guys. And so I'm thinking we're going to get like two or three people. And then pretty soon, you know, they said, everybody get over here. And we're yelling at Derek to quit talking to some folks so we can get in the picture. So he races over. And, but there was probably like, I don't know, 50, 75, 80 people
wow.
there last night. And I was only there for about a half an hour. And, and they were like, we can't wait to go to the park tomorrow. We're going to do this and this and this. And I already needed a nap by that point. So I just, my
right.
eyes kind of rolled in the back of my head, but, and they were all just, everybody was talking to everybody. Everybody knew each other either from a cruise or prior DNA or DNR, gay days, just
mm-hmm.
super fun. Yeah.
Oh,
and you're
going to
be a
cool.
guest on Scott Fullerton's Left of Straight show this week, I think, too, aren't you?
I believe the 6 o'clock hour on Tuesday. I'm trying to work it out. He kind of put me on the schedule without asking me if I was available. So I am trying to work that out to be in his 6 o'clock hour on Blog Talk Radio / Left of Straight.
Left of Straight. By the way, in the chat room, we've got Bobby who's listening in right now. So I want to give a big shout out to Bobby. We got some other people that just logged in, which is totally cool, but I don't know who you are. So I'll just say hello, guest 128 and hello, guest 68. But we've had, Tony G tuning in. We've got a bunch of folks that have pinged me on Facebook during the show. So I want to make sure we say thank you for tuning in and we want you to be here next Saturday also.
And there's Charles Crossman, who is Miss Elsie, all the way out in Prince Edward Island.
Oh, my gosh.
One of the most fabulous, fabulous drag personas online. And we have so much fun all week long. And she tunes in to listen to my drivel. So hello, Elsie.
Hello, Elsie. There we go. So, Paul, we got about a minute left. Any last closing thoughts before we wrap it up for the day and get on with our weekend?
No, I'm hoping that Frank will be back next week for a RuPaul update. And I will say right now that if RuPaul Drag Race doesn't get more interesting this season, then that'll probably be the last update we have, because it's getting boring to me. I know. So and I appreciate everybody that tunes in. I appreciate everybody that listens by the download afterwards or whatever. And, you know, we're having fun. Let us know that you're having fun and we'll keep doing this.
We've got some really cool interactive segments we're going to be introducing in the next couple of weeks as well, because we want you to call in and we want you to chime in on the chat room and have some fun with us while we're doing the show live. So just know that we're going to be extending that olive branch to you, and, you know, it's great for your skin. So olive oil and all of that good stuff. And with that, I want to say a big thanks to Tony G, who's pinging me right now. Of course, Paul, you are a dream come true. And we will see everybody live next Saturday morning at 11 a.m.
That's
East
it.
And 8 West. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening
y'all.
To Rated G Radio.
Bye.